on Menhei Umud Bey's four lines from the bottom. We talked about yesterday the whole, all the ins and outs of the case where you have dough stuck to a kneading tray or kneading bowl, whatever. We talked about more than a kazayas, less than a kazayas, which was all the Mishnah had mentioned as a factor. We mentioned the Gemara, the point of lachazik, where it's there, where it helps keep water from leaking out of the bowl, according to Rashi, or general strengthening the bowl, according to many other Rishonim. We talked about whether it's b'makom lisha or not, whether it's in the part that's actually used for kneading or not, and all the various permutations of that in terms of whether you have to get rid of that dough before Pesach or whether you're allowed to keep it because it's just helping hold the bowl together or keep water from leaking out or whatever. Now, the Mishnah had said, v'chein le'inyin tumah, bottom of Memheim Beis, v'chein le'inyin tumah, the same thing is true as far as tumah, continues the Mishnah, im makbid olav, if you're particular about it and you don't want the dough to be there, choytzitz, then it's a chatzitza, v'im roitzit b'kiyumah, and if you want to keep it there, harehu kareva, then it becomes like part of the tray, like part of the bowl, and then you don't need to do anything with it. Now, the problem is, in the first part of the Mishnah, we talked about a kezias versus less than a kezias. Nothing about makvid olav or not. So what do you mean, v'chein? Me, dummy, how is it the same thing? Hasan b'shi'ur atalya milsa. In the first part of the Mishnah, it depends on the shear, whether you have a kezias or less than a kezias in one place. Hacha b'kpeid atalya milsa. Here, we're saying it depends on whether you're makvid on it. So it's not the same thing. Amr of Yehuda, emol le'inin atumah enikain. So Rabbi Yehuda says, okay, you have to fix up the wording of the Mishnah. It means that with tumah, it's not like that. With tumah, there's a different factor involved, namely that with tumah, there's a different factor involved, namely whether you mark it or not. Amalei Abaye hold of the chayin le'inyan tumah katani. So Abaye says to him, what do you mean? The Mishnah uses the words v'chayin le'inyan tumah. How are you flipping that around and saying it means tumah is not like that? On the side over here, by the way, it brings that Rabbi Yaakov Emden wants to say that you should take out the word lay and it should just be Omer Abaye, because on the face of it, Abaye was only a very young child when Rabbi Yehuda passed away. On the other hand, there's a little bit of back and forth about that, whether that's in fact correct, whether in fact Abaye was a little bit older, was a younger man when Rabbi Yehuda was still alive. Okay. Anyway. Now, Abaye says, can't be that that's what the Mishnah means, that the Mishnah means to contrast the din of Chometz and of Tumah, because the Mishnah is saying, v'chein, that the same rules apply to both. Ela Amar Abaye, hachi karmar. So Abaye says what it means is like this. V'chein, le'inyan siruf, Tumah b'Pesach. So it is also when it comes to combining together food, when it comes to Tumah on Pesach. As opposed to that the rule that it will depend whether there's a kezias or not. Or v'shalim as hashana ikaplugta, whereas the rest of the year there's going to be a difference whether makbid or enei makbid. So when the Mishnah says v'chein le'inyan atumah im makbid olav choytzitz, what you actually have to do is those are actually two separate sentences. V'chein le'inyan atumah means so it is also on Pesach regarding tumah, as we're going to go on to say. That it depends whether it's kezias or not. And then, by the way, the Mishnah mentions, as far as the rest of the year, it depends on a different factor, im makbid olav choytzitz, etc. So, heichi dami, what's the scenario where we're saying that it would be one rule on Pesach and a different rule the rest of the year, kezias versus not, makbid versus not? We're going to ikka pochus mikabetza oichlin. Suppose that you have less than a kebetza of food. Now, we've learned before that there was a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos whether food can be makabel tumah if you have less than a kebetza of it. According to Rashi and also the Rambam, any amount of food by itself can become tummy, but to transmit tumah to other food, you need a kebetza. According to Tosfos, even to become tummy in the first place, you need a kebetza. So the scenario is, the ikka pochas b'kabetza oichlin, suppose that you have less than a kabetza of food, which touches this dough that's stuck to the bowl. V'nogu b'hai batzik, and they touch this dough which is stuck to the bowl. Now, altogether, you have a kabetza over there, and now other food, which is tahor, touch that combination of other food plus the, of other food plus the dough stuck to the tray. So, but Pesach the Isurei Choshuv on Pesach, where the Isur the Isur Chometz makes that amount of food choshuv, and regarding Isur Chometz, you don't need a kibetza, you only have a kezayis, as we learned yesterday, that a kezayis is enough to not be bottle. So therefore, regarding Tuma also, it's not bottle to the bowl, and what happens is it helps make up the shear of a kibetza. So even though you may not be machbet on it, you may not care that it's there, but halacha cares that it's there because it's a kezayis, and a kezayis of chametz is considered a significant amount regarding the issur of bal yiro, bal yibatze. Therefore, the other food that touched it combines together with it to be metame other food. So if you have, as we talked about yesterday or the day before, that a kebetza, there's machlokas and shulchan aruch, whether there are two or three zaysim in a betza, so let's say there are two. So if you have one kezayis of, you have one kezayis of food, together with one kezayis of dough stuck to the bowl, they're together, then they become tameh. Or again, according to Rashi, you don't even need that. Each piece could have become tameh by itself. But now you have a kebetza altogether. Is it going to be metameh other food? So now I'm saying on Pesach, yes. And it doesn't matter whether you machbet on it or not. As opposed to the rest of the year, there's no issur chametz the rest of the year. So a kezayis of dough stuck to the bowl doesn't necessarily have significance during the rest of the year. Therefore, the Mishnah tells us to be paid a talya milsa. It depends on whether you're machbid. It depends on whether you're particular of whether it's there or not. So therefore, im machbid olav. So if you're machbid and you plan to remove it, then it combines together because then it's considered food. So then it combines together to make up the whole shear of a kibetza. But if you want to leave it there, then it's considered like the rest of the bowl, and therefore it doesn't combine together for food. So that's that. So Abaye says that's what the Mishnah means then. When it says v'chein le'inyan atuma means as far as Pesach, and then the imach bidolov is talking about the rest of the year. By the way, there's a Tosfos in Shabbos, Gilyon HaShas refers to it over here, that meant, according to Rashi himself, who holds that food can be makabel tuma less than a kebetza, even any amount, then why do we have to dafka talk about whether there's a kebetza here to be metame other food? Can't we talk about a different nafkamina? Can this piece of dough by itself become tame or not? This piece of dough that's stuck to the tray, if something tameh touches it, does it itself become tameh or not? So Tosfos says, because maybe Rashi would say, we don't care about that, because look, we're talking during Pesach anyway. So during Pesach anyway, there's not really enough nafkamina. Either way, that piece of dough is also because it's chametz. So therefore, whether it itself can become tameh or not is really neither here nor there. And if not, it can't be metameh the bowl, because of course the food that becomes tameh can't be metameh kalim. We talked about that in the first perek. So therefore, there's no real nafkamina whether this piece of dough itself can become tameh. Even if we say, like Rashi, that a small amount can become tameh, the nafkamina would really only be, can it combine together with other food to be metameh other things. Okay. However, maskif lo Rava, but Rava says, I have a problem with that explanation. Mi katoni mitzarif. That's all very good, but mi katoni mitzarif. But after all, the word in the Mishnah is not that the rest of the year we're talking about the dinim of tziruf, of combining together for tumah. V'hachoytzitz katoni. The expression in the Mishnah was that the rest of the year, if you makbid on it, then it's choytzitz, and it creates a chatzitza. So what does that have anything to do with a biased scenario about it combining together with other food to be metame? Elo Amar Rava. So Rava says no. What it means is v'chein lahalis tara la'reva. The Mishnah is talking about as far as the dinim of making the tray tohar. So if it became tame and you need to tovel it, then is this dough a chatzitza or not? So that explains the word chotzitz. Heichidami, so what's the scenario? Kugandi tame hachareva, suppose that this bowl became tame, or boilat bully, but Pesach, and you want to toivel it on, or boilat bully, and you want to toivel it. So, again, fine, he accepts the distinction that Abaye is making between the words v'chein le'inin atoma and the words im makbid olav, that one's talking about Pesach and one's talking about the rest of the year, but not like Abaye said that we're talking about combining together the dough and other food to be metame, but rather we're talking about the distinction is when, what are the rules when this dough is a chatzitza and when it's not. The Pesach, the Isurei Choshuv, on Pesach, where the Isur makes it significant, if you have a kazayis, therefore choitzit, so therefore even if you wanted the dough to stay there, because let's say it's keeping water from running out or whatever, nevertheless, because it's a kazayis, then it's still a chatzitza, because you're obligated to get rid of it, so it's a chatzitza, and when you tovel this dish, it doesn't work. But if you plant, but so therefore for like sakala tvila, therefore tvila isn't effective. The keli still remains tame. The shalimo is hashana, but paid Italian milsa. The rest of the year it depends on whether he's makbid or not. Therefore, e makbid all of choitzit. So if he's makbid on it, then it also is a chatzitza. And if he wants to keep it, and it's going to stay stuck to the bowl, and it's going to help strengthen the bowl, or it's less than a kazayis, but that's considered like part of the bowl. So that explains the word chatzitz. Still, maskif la rapapa. Still, rapapa says, still, that fits with the word in the Mishnah chatzitz, but it doesn't fit. The Mishnah had said, v'chein le'inin atuma. So, mi katoni v'chein le'inin tara. Did the Mishnah use the words that so it is also as far as tahara, hala in tumah katani? After all, the Mishnah had said b'chein le'inin atumah, which implies that we have to be talking about a scenario where we're dealing with tumah. So that's an advantage of Abaye's explanation, which was talking about tumah. But on the other hand, we have the problem with it that it used the word chotzitz. So you have to find, or Papa says, a way in which we can be talking about tumah rather than tahara, as well as chatzitza, rather than, as Abaye said, tziruf. So how do we make that work? What the Mishnah means is, can the tray become tame through this piece of dough? Now, we said before, food can't be metame a tray. On the other hand, it can't be metame a keli. On the other hand, if the food is considered part of the keli, if it's bottled to the keli, then it could. So therefore, heichidami, so what's the scenario? Could go into noga sheretz b'hai batzik. So if a sheretz touches this piece of dough, so then it depends. But Pesach de isurei choshuv, so on Pesach, where the isur makes it choshuv, choitzitz, then the dough is considered a chatzitza. Not like Rava had said chatzitza as far as tvila, but chatzitza in the sense that the dough itself is going to become tame, fine, it'll become a rishon l'tumah, but that prevents the tumah from the sheretz from going to the keli, because now the dough being a rishon l'tumah is not able to be metame the keli. So even if you would have liked to leave that dough there and make it bottled to the rest of the keli, you can't, because again, the isur makes it important. Therefore, Tumah doesn't end up coming onto the keli. The Shari Mosa Shana, the Paid Italia, the rest of the year, it doesn't depend on a Kazayas or not. Depends whether you're Machbid on the piece or not. So therefore, Im Machbid Olav, so if you are Machbid and you would like to remove it, even during the rest of the year, so even if it's less than a Kazayas and it's Choitzit, then it blocks the Tumah from spreading to the bowl. If you want to keep it, then it's considered like the rest of the bowl, and therefore, when the sheretz touches it, then the bowl itself is going to become tummy. One interesting point you see then is that Rav Papa is learning that that chotzitz actually creates a kula. In the previous two explanations, according to Abaye's explanation that we're talking about combining together food, and according to Rava's explanation that we're talking about the chatzitza in tevila, in both of them, if we say that it's chotzitz, and if we say that it's considered effective, then it creates a chumrah. You have now something that can combine with other food to be metame. You have something that prevents the mikvah water from touching every part of the keli, and therefore the tevila is not effective. Here, according to the papa, it's the other way around. On Pesach, it means we have a kula compared to the rest of the year. That even if you have a piece, that even if you have a piece that roots, that as long as it's a kazayis in size, And even if Roitza Bikiyuma, even if you would like to keep it there, nevertheless, because you don't have the right to do that, because you're supposed to be getting rid of it, you're being Oiran, Bayura, Bayimotza, therefore it creates a kula as far as the dinim of Tuma, that the tray won't become Tome from the dead sheds. Okay. Next, the Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of chometz, botzik hacheresh, deaf dough that is deaf. Now, what does that mean? Rashi has two explanations. One is, you look at a deaf person, they have ears, you can't visibly see that they're deaf, but nevertheless they are. So the same way, what you have over here is, you have a piece of dough where you're not sure if it became chometz. Just like when you first look at a deaf person, you're not sure whether they can actually hear you or not. That's Rashi's first explanation. Second explanation is the word is not hacheresh with a shin, but hacheresh with a sin, which means earthenware. So it's a piece of dough which is hard, like earthenware, so you can't tell whether it's actually become or becoming chometz or not. The Rambam has yet a different explanation. The Rambam agrees that the word is cheresh, which means deaf, but the Rambam explains that what it means is if when you first make dough, the Rambam explains, before it starts rising, if you bang on it, it doesn't really make a sound. Then when it starts becoming chametz, if you bang on it, then it makes a sound. It has a little bit of a hollow sound to it. So therefore, at that point, you would know it's chometz. So cheresh over here means that you bang on it and it doesn't make a sound, so you can't be sure whether it became chometz. And then the Raivad disagrees with that and says that actually what it is, it's almost the other way around. When you first make the dough and you bang on it, it makes more like a high-pitched sound. Then when it becomes chometz, then the sound becomes much quieter, he says. So like a deaf person, we're like they can't speak clearly. So whatever the case, the point is, in other words, we have this piece of dough. We don't know if it actually became chometz or not. So how do we tell? So the Mishnah says, Im yesh kayotzeboi shehechmetz, if you have a similar batch of dough, let's say that was made at the same time, which became chometz, hareza oser, then the botzek acheresh is also oser because we would assume that both of them become chometz at the same rate. So, of course, the Gemara asks, im ein sham kayotzeboi mahu, and what do you do if you don't have a batch of dough that was made at the same time? How do you tell? So, omer ababohu, omer abshimim lokish, then in that case, the shear, how much time it takes for it to become chometz, is kadesha yelech odem im migdal nunya l'tveria, is the amount of time it would take for a person to walk from migdal nunya until tveria, which is a mil 2,000 amas. So the Gemara asks the name of mil. Why bother mentioning Migdal Nunya and Tveria? Just say straight out, it means a mil. Just say straight out, the amount of time is a mil. The answer is Hakamash Malan. Rish Lakish wants us to know the Shiura de mil to Migdal Nunya vad Tveria. You should know, by the way, what is the size of a mil? It's the distance from Migdal Nunya to Tveria. Now, this is where we get the concept of 18 minutes for matzahs, because you have three different opinions among the Rishonim how long it takes to walk a mil. The various days are based on how we understand the Gemara. We're going to have a Gemara later on in the ninth Perek that's going to talk about the length of time of Alois HaShachar and Sefik HaChavim and put it in terms of Milin. And you have different Rishonim have different understandings of the Gemara, of the calculations in the Gemara over there. So those yield three different possible lengths for the how long it takes to walk a mil. 18 minutes, 22 and a half minutes, or 24 minutes. So when we say 18 minutes for matzah, is we're following the first of those opinions because of l'chomer, because we're dealing with a din d'oraisa, so therefore we have to be machmer. actually, it's interesting that, Gilui Mashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger over here, refers to something from Turei Evan, from the Shagas Arya, in Masechta Megillah, you have a very similar piece of Gemara where it mentions there that if you have a place within a mill of a city, of a walled city, then it's considered like that walled city as far as when you lay in the Megillah on Purim, and it gives an example over there from Chamsun to Tveria and says that it's a mill. So why do we have two different things from here from Migdal Nunya and there from Chamsun? So the Turei Evan explains, We learned in Erevin that there's two different types of Amma. There's Amma Sechekes, where you hold the hands a little bit, where you hold the hand a little bit loosely. And then there's Amma Atseva, where you hold them together more tightly. So the distinction between Migdal Nunya to Tveria versus Chamsan to Tveria may reflect that difference, where one of them is a looser Amma and the other one is a tighter Amma. And therefore, that would affect then the amount of time that we're talking about over here and the distance that we're talking about over there. With that said, actually, it's interesting that Yerushalmi actually defines the distance from Migdal, uses the same, it mentions the same thing. Rish Lakish lives in Eretz Yisrael, after all, so what he says is mentioned in the Yerushalmi. But there, the Yerushalmi says, in our sugya, in the parallel sugya in the Yerushalmi, it doesn't say that it's 1 mil from Migdal Nunya to Tveria, it says it's 4 mil. So which would be four times as long then. If we say that a mil is 18 minutes, it would mean you have 72 minutes. Now, obviously, we don't do that lahalacha. Most of the Rishonim seem to ignore that Yerushalmi altogether. Okay, very nice. The Yerushalmi says four, but the Bavli says one. And then when you have Machlokas, Yerushalmi and Bavli, the halacha is like the Bavli. But on the side of the Rif, there's a pirush called Shiltei HaGiborim, where he collects things from different earlier poskim. In particular, he has a lot over there from the Riaz, Rabbi Shaya HaAchron Zal. He was a Rishon who lived in Italy in the 1300s. Anyway, he brings from the Riaz an interesting idea. Maybe what it is the Bavli over here is talking about, if you leave the dough unattended, then yeah, it'll take 18 minutes for it to become chametz. The Yerushalmi is talking about, even if you keep on working on the dough, there's going to come a point when it's going to become chametz regardless. And that point is 4 milim. So according to him, the maximum you could ever work on a batch of dough is 4 mil. Lamaisa, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is, the Gemara is going to tell us later on Memches, that you could be working the dough kolayim kolayim and it won't become chametz. So therefore, as a matter of halacha lamaisa, we ignore what the Yerushalmi says about 4 mil and just focus on what the Bavli is saying over here about 1 mil. Yeah. Okay. There was 150, 180 or so years ago, there was a Yid named Reb Yehosef Schwartz from Germany who moved to Eretz Yisrael and wrote a sefer called Tvor Sa'aretz, where he goes through trying to find all many different geographical locations in Eretz Yisrael and things like that. And he claimed to have identified where Migdal Nunya is. And in fact, it is about 4 mil from Tveria. On the other hand, the Rav of Tveria at that time wrote a kundris opposing him and saying that no, Lav Davka is the same place. Could be the Migdal Nunya could be a different place, which is much closer to Tveria. Anyway, yeah. Okay. So since we're mentioning shiurim of distances like that, so here's one. So here's somewhere it is in fact 4 mil. Amar of Abohu, Amar of Shimon Lakish.
Question.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Isn't the leavening time dependent on the amount of yeast and the proportion of yeast to dough?
Well, if you put yeast in, obviously, if you put yeast in, it's going to rise much faster. What we're talking about over here is you made a batch of dough. You didn't put any yeast in, but there are yeast cells floating around in the air. So eventually, some of them are going to find their way into the dough and start fermenting it. So the question is, how long does it take for them to start having that effect on the dough? Obviously, if you just have a couple of them fell on the dough, they don't automatically make it chametz. It takes time for them to start doing their work, digesting the starches and forming carbon dioxide and so forth. So the question is, how long does that take? So our Gemara is telling us that amount of time would be 1 mil. Yeah,
but all this time we were talking about unyeasted dough.
Dough. Yeah, yeah. If you put in yeast, then there's nothing to talk about. Then obviously you're not using it for Pesach. Yeah. Yeah. Yeast in and of itself isn't chametz. Yeast itself is microscopic little life forms over there that digest the starch and so forth, but they make dough chametz. Well, eventually, so that's the thing. If you're kneading it, then anything that they're doing, they're getting moved around anyway. I don't even know if they're able to do their digestion process. But even if there is, any carbon dioxide that they create escapes, so the dough never has a chance to rise. Then you leave it, and eventually the carbon dioxide starts accumulating, and then you start having cracks and eventually bubbles and so forth. Well, that's the thing. It takes time for it to become. It takes time for it to reach a stage where it's considered chametz, and that's that stage. The Gemara is telling us over here is the time it takes to walk 1 mil, which lachomera we say means 18 minutes. If you put in yeast, then well, it doesn't right away make it chametz, but never. Well, in theory, but yeah, I mean, practically speaking, it means it's going to become chametz much faster. And then you don't know, and therefore you wouldn't be able to bake it and eat it. Same way as we talked about before in the previous perek, for example, if you put in juice together with water, where it makes it become chametz faster, so fast that you may not have a chance to bake it before it becomes chametz. Yeah. Okay. I mean, in theory, I guess if a person were to make a batch of dough and then put it in a sealed container or whatever where no yeasts could get in, then of course it could stay matzah for much longer. But would we rely on that as far as Hilchos Pesach? I doubt it. Yeah, don't try it. Yeah. Okay. So Amar Rabba Bo, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Legabel, as far as a person who needs dough. Now you have professionals. Sometimes you have everybody needs bread to eat. Not everybody knows how to knead dough properly. So sometimes you would hire a gabel to do the work for you. So Rashi explains, we're talking about like this. Let's say, for example, now ideally the dough should be made b'tahara, because you want to be able to take challah from it, as we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah, and the challah should be tahor, so you can give it to the kohen and he can eat it. So what happens if you hire a gabel? Now, so he's supposed to be kneading your dough using your kalim, your kneading bowl, and your other kalim. What if those kalim are tame? So we're saying up to 4 mil, the Chachamim are going to require this gabel without extra pay to go find a mikveh to tovel these kalim before he starts the work. If the nearest mikveh, if the nearest body of water is more than 4 mil away, then you can't require him to do that. Then either he can make it betumah, or he can tell the balabas, you have to pay me for my time in going to tovel the kalim. But up to four mil ahead, not really ahead because he's at home, so up to 4 mil in any direction, he's obligated to go on his own and find such a thing. Tosfos brings a different explanation that what it means is we're talking about a person who's traveling on the road. So he has flour which he wants to have made into bread. So again, the point is that he could do it himself, but then he's tame, and then the challah is going to be tame. Further on, within 4 mil ahead of him on the road, there is a gabel who will make it b'tahara. Then if it's within 4 mil, we're saying he has to wait until he reaches that gabel to make the bread for him, and that way it won't become tame. So that's a gabel. For the tefillah, also as far as davening, the word tefillah, gabel means a person who kneads dough. His professional job is to knead dough. Yeah, megabel means to mix together some kind of powdery stuff like flour together with water. We had Masechta Shabbos, for example. We talked about megabel offer, where a person is kneading dust to make into clay or something, for example. Yeah. Vilat tefillah, also as far as davening, if a person is traveling and he's getting ready to stop for the night, if there's a shul within 4 mil ahead of him, then he has to go to where that shul is, so that he can daven with a minyan, and then he'll spend the night there. But if it's more than 4 mil away, then we don't require him to do it. He can daven via chidus. Again, Tosfos brings from the Aruch a different explanation of vilat tefillah, that it means as far as if it's coming time for davening and he's supposed to wash his hands before davening, if there's water ahead of him up to 4 mil, then he should wait until he finds the water. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, because if it's at the time of davening that he's supposed to daven right there, even if he doesn't have water, just wipe his hands on something, and if it's not at the time of davening, then why is he limited to 4 mil? Anyway, that's the tefillah. And the netilas yadayim, also as far as netilas yadayim, where a person wants to eat bread and there's water, and he knows that there's water within 4 mil ahead of him. So all those things are bar mil, and all those things is 4 mil. As opposed to if it's more than 4 mil away, then we don't require. Actually, the Alter Rebbe brings, at the end of Seder Netilas Yadayim, the Alter Rebbe brings that not necessarily are we talking about over here as far as bread. As far as bread, he starts by saying, now we know you also have to wash for wet vegetables and wet fruits. For those kinds of things, we're saying if you don't have water available, then you can wrap your hands in a cloth or put on gloves or whatever and eat them. For bread, the Alter Rebbe says that ein shum tzad heter b'olam. So he says yesh omrim, that based on our Gemara over here, that if there's no water within 4 milim that ahead of you, then you're allowed to wrap up your hands and eat bread. But he says even then there are those who are machmir, because you have rishonim who learn Now there is a concept that's brought, that the Gemara brings, I think, in Cholin, and it's brought in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim in Shulchan Aruch, that in theory a person can wash his hands in the morning and make a tanai on them all day, that washing is going to help for anything else that he needs. He has to be careful, of course, not to touch any covered parts of his body or his hair or whatever, but if he can do that, so our Gemara might be talking about that kind of situation, where anyway he washed Negovasa in the morning and he made such a tanai, so therefore we can be makel about him not having to wash again for bread. But if not, then that's what they're saying, according to those poskim, and he says, v'amach metova el bracha, that there's never a heter to eat bread without washing, even if there's no water within 4 meal ahead. So actually, I think there are some contemporary poskim, some poskim nowadays, who say, or in the last 100 years or whatever, who say it doesn't depend on the distance, it depends on the time. So if we're saying over here 4 mil, that's the equivalent of saying 72 minutes. So if you're going in a car, then of course it's much more than 4 mil, or 72 minutes. In a car, in 72 minutes, you can go 60 miles, you can go 60 miles or something. So yeah. Okay. Amr of Nachmei Yitzchok, Ivu Amra. So Rav Nachmei Yitzchok says, I agree mostly with what was just said, but first of all, it wasn't Rav Abahu saying in the name of Rav Shimon Lakish. It was Ivu saying it, this thing in the name of Rish Lakish. And number two, he said there are 4 dinim where we say 4 milim. You only listed 3. The person making the dough, davening, and washing hands for bread. I'm telling you that Ivo actually mentioned, when he told this over in the name of Rish Lakish, he mentioned there's a 4th din where 4 mil comes into play. Namely, v'chodaminayo ibud. The fourth of them is tanning leather. Now, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Cholin, the Mishnayos are talking about over there about the concept where you have, generally speaking, the skin of an animal is tough, and it's not considered part of the flesh of the animal. It may have the din of a shomer or something for the meat, so it can become tummy with it, but by itself, it's not considered food. But the Mishnah mentions over there, you have certain kinds of animal skins that are soft and in principle are edible, and therefore they're considered like meat lahalacha. Chicken, I guess, would be an example. That's not one of the examples this gives over there, but whatever. The point is, there are ones where the skin is soft, and therefore it's considered like the flesh. But the Mishnah says, v'cholon she'ibdan, all of those skins, if you tan them to make them into leather or parchment, or she'hilich behen kedei avoida, or even if you didn't actually tan them, but you walked on them, the amount of kedei avoida, which we're going to define in a second, tahorin, then they're tahor, because then they're not considered food anymore, they're not considered edible. Chutz me'or ha'adam, with the exception of the skin of a person. So actually, the Gemara brings over there 2 possibilities. Is it that midaraisa, the skin of a person, is mitame, and really midaraisa, once the skin is tanned, then it shouldn't be makabel tumah anymore, but the chachamim still said that it still remains tame? Or is it that even daraisa, that daraisa, it's not tame at all, but drabanon, we add a new thing and we say it is mitame? The Gemara explains over there, the reason is, you could have, for example, a person who his parents pass away, let's say, and he misses them so much, he wants to always have a keepsake of around his house, so he takes their skin and he has it made into a rug or something. So he always has a very, very macabre thing. I mean, if a person did that, you should probably have his head examined. But Lemaisa, you have such people. So therefore, to prevent that, the Chachamim said that it's still matame. We find in various Gemaras that when the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara applied, people were very careful. Not the Amei Aretz maybe are not so careful in Tumah V'Tahara, but at least the Chaverim were very, very careful in Tumah V'Tahara, sometimes to an exaggerated degree. Sometimes even you have a person who was more careful about that than other mitzvahs. Actually, we had an example of it in Brachas. We had an example in Brachas where a man wants to be mezana with a woman. And this is when Tevilas Ezra, when the din of Tevilas Ezra was still in effect, where you can't daven or learn Torah as long as he's tummy till she goes to a mikveh. So she says to him, Reka, she says to him, you empty person, is there a mikveh nearby here? What are you going to do? You're not going to be able to learn Torah if you do this. And that kept him away. So that it's znus, and that it's also, that didn't keep him away, but the fear that he's going to be tummy, that kept him away. So the same thing over here. Then if the Chachamim say that human skin is still matame, then that'll keep these people from doing these kinds of things. Yeah. So now the question is, v'kama kedei avoida, So now the question is, how much is considered kidei avoda? Omer of Inya, or Ivu, really, it's supposed to be Omer of Yana, kidei hiluch, arbar milin, the time it takes to walk 4 mil. So if you take, for example, one example the Mishnah gives over there, as far as Orisein Kibsaran, is, for example, the skins of the skins of some of the Shemona Shrotzim. So if you take the skin of one of those, and you, which would be kibsaron, it would be considered like the flesh as far as tuma, and you put it on the ground, and people are stepping on it for a total amount of time, of the time it takes to walk 4 mil, then already it's not considered edible anymore, and it's not matame. So that's another thing that involves 4 mil. Okay. Now, going back to, we said as far as the kneading the dough and tefillah and the tefillah sedayim, we said 4 mil. So, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Reb Chanina, lo shonu ela lafanav. That 4 mil only applies if it's ahead of you. So you're anyway going in that direction, so the Chachamim are going to matriach you to go for, according to Rashi's definition of gabel, by the way, it's not, because according to Rashi's definition of gabel, you're talking about he's at home, he hired a gabel to knead his dough for him, and therefore four mil would be in any direction. So we're talking about as far as tefillah and Atilas Yadayim. Where again, tefillah, whether he's on the road and there's a place within 4 mil where he could daven. So then he's obligated to go there and spend the night there so he can daven with a minion. And Atilas Yadayim as far as washing hands for bread. So those, if the water or the shul is within 4 amas, within 4 mil ahead of him, then we require him to do that. You anyway, going in that direction just means you're going to have to wait a little longer, so therefore the chacham are going to require you to do that. Aval achrav, but if it's behind you and you'd have to turn back, afilu mil ein echozer. You wouldn't even have to go back, even if it's only a mil away. Amar Rav Acha Umina, so Rav Acha says, well, in that case, if you mention a mil, then that means exactly, that's exactly what it means. Mil hu de'ine chozer. You can't require him to turn back if it's as much as a mil. Ha pachas mi mil chozer, implying, but if it's within a mil behind him, then we do require him to go back, because then that's not going so far out of his way. Okay. And all these things are brought halacha in the respective places in Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Mishnah says, how do we take challah when on Yom Tov Pesach when the dough is tameh? Now, if the dough was tahor, no problem. You give it to the kohen and he can eat it. He can right away bake it on the spot and he can eat it. But the problem is challah tameh, the kohen's not allowed to eat. He has to burn it. You're not allowed to burn. You're not allowed to burn kodshim on Yom Tov. You can't keep it until the evening, because by that time it'll become by that time it's going to become chametz. Yeah, it's Pesach we're talking about, obviously. Yeah, so you can't keep it till the evening because it'll become chametz. You can't bake it because it's not royal achilas adam. You're not allowed to eat it, so therefore you're only allowed to bake on Yom Tov only where it's needed for food for Yom Tov. It doesn't, even if a dog could eat it, Rashi says, you can't because ain't sof and kodshim be yomtiv. You're not allowed to burn or otherwise destroy kodshim on yomtiv. So what do you do? How do you, this Gemara is also brought in Beitza, and Tosfos over there refers to that maybe you would be allowed to feed it to a dog in terms of the halachas of getting rid, and in terms of that, but before it becomes chametz, the problem is that since it's challah, and it's meant to be eaten by people, you can't feed it to dogs. So even though, yes, this one is tameh, and people can't eat it, nevertheless, the only valid thing you can do with it is burn it. You can't feed it to dogs. Anyway, so what do you do with this on Yom Tov? So Rabbi Eliezer Oymer leTikra LaShem Ad SheTeofa. Rabbi Eliezer says, don't call it by the name challah until it's baked. Now, what does that accomplish? Each loaf of bread could conceivably be used for challah. You don't necessarily have to have that you're going to take one whole loaf and use it for challah. You could take a little bit off each loaf. And then that way, you could take a little bit off each loaf. And then that way, each loaf, there was a reason why you needed to bake it on Yom Tov. So therefore, there's no problem. Then Rashi says, once given that you're able to do that, then instead, if you want, after it's baked, you could instead take one whole matzah and designate it as challah on behalf of the whole batch. And then obviously, since it's tummy, you can't eat it, and the kohen can't eat it, but fine, you give it to the kohen, and after Yom Tov, you can burn it. So we're going to learn in the Gemara later on that Rabbi Eliezer holds that you can take challah after the dough is baked, as long as they're all placed together in one basket or one box or something, then it combines them together as far as challah. So you could, Rabbi Eliezer saying, that's what you should do. The best way of doing it, Rabbi Eliezer says, is bake the whole batch of dough. So now you have a bunch of matzahs. You're allowed to do that on Yom Tov because you would have had the option, if you wanted, of taking a little bit out of each one and using it for challah. And therefore, each matzah, as you're baking it for a valid purpose because you want to eat it on Yom Tov. You can't eat it until challah is taken. Fine, from each one, I'm going to break off a little piece and combine all those pieces together and use those as challah. So then, now that you have that possibility, which is called hoyil, since, then once you do that, then already instead, when it comes to actually taking challah, you don't have to do it that way. You don't have to break off a piece from each one. Instead, you can take one whole matzah and designate it as challah for the whole batch. And that would work according to Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, that's the best way of doing it. Then on Omer Beis, actually, Rashi is going to bring a different possibility. Is what the Gemara is going to mention over there, that once you designate any one of them as challah, you could though also go and be matur neder and say it's not challah anymore. So therefore, each one in a certain sense still belongs to you, and therefore you could say that each one, when you baked it, this one didn't have to be the one that's going to end up being challah. So again, you're allowed to bake it on Yom Tov because you're allowed to bake food on Yom Tov yourself. What? But you're only allowed to bake when it can be eaten on Yom Tov. Here, the challah tmeah can't be eaten. But the point is, either again, what we can do is we can break off a little piece of each one and make a challah. So the whole rest of it was baked for the whole rest of that piece of that matzah was baked in order to eat on Yom Tov, and therefore the fact that attached to it was a little piece which you're not going to end up eating doesn't matter. Or because any particular one that you designate for challah, it didn't have to be to begin with. This was the one that was going to be designated, and even after you designated as challah, you could be matur neder, and it's not challah anymore. So therefore, each one there's a heter to bake. Okay. Ben b'seira oimet hato b'tzonen. Ben b'seira says what you should do is not bake it, but what you do is you put the dough in cold water. The cold water will help prevent it from becoming chametz, and that way you're going to be able to keep it until after Yom Tov, and then you can burn it. Tosfos says, I mean, you have Rabbi Eliezer, we're now going to have Rabbi Yeshua. They agree that, yeah, you could in principle put it in cold water. They're just concerned that if you do, it might not be cold enough. So Tosfos says, if the Dieved, according to Rabbi Eliezer, were you supposed to designate it as challah only after it's baked? What if you did it while it's dough, as you usually do? Then, yeah, Tosfos says Rabbi Eliezer would agree that you put it in cold water, because then you have no alternative. Amar Rabbi Yeshua, however, Rabbi Yeshua says, never mind all that. This isn't the kind of chametz that you're not allowed to have, that you have an issue of bal yirah bal yimatzah, because once you've designated as challah, it's not yours anymore. It belongs to the kohen. So you're not over on it. And the kohen's not over on it either, because it doesn't belong to any particular kohen. It belongs to the kohenim generically. So therefore, nobody's over on bal yirah bal yimatzah with it. Therefore, elamah frushato manichata ada erev. So very simple, Rabbi Yeshua says. Designate it as challah while it's still dough. Set it aside till the evening. V'imechmitza. And if it becomes chametz, okay, it becomes chametz. It's not your problem. You're not over on bal yirah bal yimatzah on it. Okay. So the Gemara is going to mainly focus. Yeah.
Bal yirah and bal yimatzah is a general prohibition. It doesn't specifically refer to the person's
matzah very much refers to the person. Remember in the first parak, we started talking about that you're not allowed to see your own chametz. You're allowed to see chametz that belongs to goyim, that's in your house during Pesach, and that belongs to hektish. So the same thing over here, Rabbi Yeshua says, in effect, this chametz is like
the Torah doesn't mention that it has to be your chametz, does it?
The Torah most definitely mentions, if it didn't, the Chachamim couldn't make that up on their own. Because
where did it say?
Because it says, lo yiro l'cha, and lo yimotza l'cha, so therefore we had a whole sugya about it in the first parak, that we learned from the l'chas, that we learned that shokho yataroya avalataroya shalachedim shokovaya. So yeah.
That's where we take it from.
That's what we take it from. So Rabbi Yeshua says that's what applies in this case then. In this case, once you designate it as challah, it's not yours anymore. It's not the Kohen's either until you actually give it to him. So right now, in between, it's in limbo. It's not yours. It's not anybody's. It's not anybody's specifics. It belongs to the Kohenim generically. Therefore, nobody is over on Bayur or Bayur Matzah with it. Now, the Gemara is going to focus mainly on the machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Because Ben Beseira whether it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira or Rabbi Yeshua ben Beseira or whatever, the Mishnah just called him ben Beseira, but he mentions the point about putting it in cold water. Okay, you know, so he's sort of halfway between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. He's saying that he's giving you a practical thing about putting it in cold water, but the question is, should you designate it as dough, like Rabbi Yeshua says, and not worry about it becoming chametz, or should you wait until it's baked, like Rabbi Eliezer? So the Gemara says lema, but still we see that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that if you were to designate it as dough, then you'd have a problem about it all by your matzah. And Ben Beseira agrees with that, so that's why he's saying put it in cold water to prevent it from becoming chametz. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua is saying there's no problem. But that's the problem. So the question is, what's the underlying argument between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua? So the Gemara says lema b'tovas hanor kamiflegi. Can we say that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing regarding tovas hanor? Now it's like this: you have to give truma, and challah and so forth to the kohenim, but you as the balabas have the right to decide which kohen you're going to give it to, and that means also so that means, in other words, tovas hanor means that the kohen owes you one for it, but also even more important is Rashi explains that therefore, for example, one Yisrael can say to another, you know, my daughter is married to a Kohen, so I have grandchildren who are Kohenim. I would like them to get your truma or your challah. So here, I'll give you a few bucks, and you give your truma or your challah to them. That kind of thing is called Tovas Hanor. Where Reuven says to Shimon, I, Reuven, have grandchildren who are Kohenim, so you, Shimon, I'm going to give you a few bucks, and the next time you have truma or challah, give it to my grandchildren. So that's called Tovas Hanor. So Reuven is entitled to that money. So is that the machlokas? The Rabbi Eliezer saw a Tovas Hanor mamon. So Rabbi Eliezer would say that makes the challah considered mamon to the extent that he would be over on Bal Yiro Bal Yimotzeh for having it around because he's able to get Tovas Hanor from it. Rabbi Yeshua Sava Tovas Hanor any mamon. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua would say Tovas Hanor is not mamon, so it's not considered his to the extent that he would be over on Bal Yiro Bal Yimotzeh. It's also not a matter of, we learned in the first parak, that you're not allowed to take a pikodon of chametz from somebody else, but this isn't considered a pikodon because, again, it doesn't belong yet to any particular kohen. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua would say it's not a problem. So is that the machlokas, that whether tovas hanor mamon or not? So the Gemara says, like, not necessarily. Dekula alma sabri tovas hanor enim mamon. Both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua might agree that tovas hanor enim mamon. So we're not worried about the fact that, yes, you could get a few bucks for having... For giving your truma or your challah to a particular kohen, that doesn't make it considered mamon. Rather, the machloikas, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, would be based on the concept of hoyil. Hoyil means since we have something that could be changed, that would change the halacha, that would change the status of this thing as far as halacha, then even though that thing hasn't actually happened, we could consider as though it did happen. So the Rabbi Eliezer Saba, hoyol ve'iboy itchalale, since if he wants, he could be matu neder, once he designates this piece of dough or this particular matzah as challah, he could be matu neder, and then it becomes tevel again. So he goes to the Rav and he says, you know, I designated this particular matzah as challah on behalf of my whole batch of dough, but I changed my mind. I don't want this one. I want to eat this one after all. It looks particularly nice or whatever. I want to designate a different one instead. And the Rav will be matzah neder. So it's considered his. It's considered his mamon. Now, obviously, he's going to have to take challah before he eats it in the end, but the challah is not necessarily going to be that one. It could be a different one. So any particular one that he bakes, you can't say he's being over on Yom Tov on it because this particular one could be the one that's not challah. So therefore, even if kara ala shein, so even if he designates a piece as challah, he can still so in the Mishnah we were talking about that he bakes them first and then he designates challah. But now the Gemara is saying that even if he first designates it as challah while it's still dough, no problem. Based on this concept of hoyel, we could say he could bake all of them because even the one that he designated as challah, which nobody can eat because challah tmeya. Nevertheless, since he could be matu neder, then that one is not necessarily going to end up being the one that's challah. It could be a different one that's challah. And then, so each one, he's not over on the surim of yom tov by baking it. The whole dough is tummy, but the rest of it, once he takes out challah, there's no problem. You're allowed to eat tummy. You're allowed to eat tummy food. Yeah, you're allowed to, because you're allowed to eat it on Yom Tov. You're allowed to bake it. No, the oven doesn't become tummy from food in it. Remember, food is not metame or keli. Even if it did, it's neither here nor there. So therefore, said Rabbi Eliezer would say that works because of hoyo. But Rabbi Yeshua sava loy amrin and hoyo. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua would say we don't say that concept of hoyo. No, the fact is right now this particular one has been designated as challah, so therefore it would be a problem. So the fact that it becomes chametz, you don't have to be concerned about, Rabbi Yeshua says, because again, it's not yours. So if the loizel chametz that you have to worry about, bal yirah bal yimatzah. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua would say, not like Rabbi Eliezer, go ahead and bake it and rely on hoyel. Rabbi Yeshua would say, you can't bake it because hoyel is not a valid factor. So if you're baking it, then it comes out. You're baking something on Yom Tov that's not necessary for Yom Tov, and therefore you're being over on the dinim of Yom Tov. Actually, Rashi points out, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, it is preferable to not have to use hoyel if possible. So the better way to do it is, like we said in the Mishnah, first bake the whole thing, then take one and designate it as challah. That way you're not having to rely on hoyel. But if you didn't, if, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if you designated it as challah while it was still dough, then rely on hoyel and go ahead and bake it. Not like Rabbi Yeshua, who says, leave it as dough and let it become chametz. Later on, at the end of the sugya, on Memches Amar Aleph, Rashi points out that he has some problems with this explanation, that if you're saying that a hoyo is, you can be matir neder, and now it's not going to be, and now it's not going to be considered, it's not going to be considered challah anymore. So further on in the sugya, we talk about hektish, for example. What about, for example, we say avalata roya shalachedim b'shal gavoya. We said you're allowed to see chametz of hektish. If hoyo is a factor, then why don't we say the same thing? How could you see chametz of hektish? You could be matir neder, and this thing isn't hektish anymore. So because of that, and some other problems, so Rashi says that I prefer that there would be a different girsa over here. When we say in the Gemara over here that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua say hoyel, not hoyel as we're saying over here, that hoyel that he could be matir neder, but rather hoyel of that each one, that again, like we said, like Rashi had said in the Mishnah, each one conceivably could actually be eaten, because instead of taking a whole matzah and designating as challah for the whole batch, you could take a little piece off of each one and combine it together to make the shiur challah. So hoyo would mean each one by itself is able, the most of it is able to be eaten. Only a tiny bit of each one would be the challah, which is going to be also to be eaten. So that would be the hoyol over here, not a matter of being matir neder, but a matter of that hoyol that you could take a little piece off each one. Right, but the problem is, again, how are you baking it on Yom Tov? The question is, how are you baking? The question is, you can't bake it unless you can eat it. That's the problem, right? By the way, other Mephoshim point out, now why don't we say another possibility? Take a batch of Tohur dough and take challah from it on behalf of the Tomei one. And the answer is you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to take that Tohur Alat Meya. You have to take from each batch for itself. Okay. So that's the thing. So there's two ways of understanding the hoyo that Rabbi Eliezer is saying in the Gemara over here. The girsa that we have in front of us, which Rashi says later on is the girsa of his Reveim, is that the hoyo is that if he wanted, he could be matir neder, and then the one that he designated as challah is no longer considered challah. So therefore he was allowed to bake it. So again, the better thing still would be to bake it before you ever designate one as challah. Then you don't have to rely on hoyel at all. But if you designated it as challah while it was still dough, then rely on hoyel and go ahead and bake it. But that's hoyel. Now that's Rebbe Eliezer says you can use hoyel. That because afterwards, if you wanted, you could be matir neder there and say that this one is not challah anymore, and a different one is going to be designated as challah. Therefore, any individual one, as you bake it, you haven't been over on the isurim of Yom Tov. As opposed to Rabbi Yeshua wouldn't allow that. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua would say, I don't need hoyel. Once you designate it as challah, it's not yours anymore. So in other words, Rebbe Eliezer would agree that Rebbe Eliezer would agree with that basic point that Tovas Hanah Eini Mamon. But Rebbe Eliezer would still say, still, how are you baking it? Rebbe Eliezer would still say, I want you to bake it. I don't want you to leave it and become chametz. I want you to bake it, but that baking it requires that we use hoyel. So either the hoyel of Matir Neder, or as Rashi says later on Daf Mem Ches, the hoyel of that you could conceivably break off a piece of each one after they're baked and use them for challah. So the better thing is, Rebbe Eliezer says, don't designate it as challah when it's dough in the first place. Instead, rely on the fact that you could designate challah after it's baked, as Rebbe Eliezer himself says, we're going to quote later on in the Gemara, that Rebbe Eliezer says. And then therefore, so you do it that way. Whereas Rebbe Yeshua, who doesn't accept that concept, Rebbe Yeshua says you have to designate challah while it's still dough. So according to him, then there's no option of waiting until it's baked. So therefore, and he doesn't hold of hoyo that you should be allowed to bake it. He doesn't hold of hoyle that would allow you to bake it. So therefore, he says the only choice then is to designate it while it's dough, and then don't worry about by your all by your matzah. Because not yours anyway. Right? No, according to Rabbi Yeshua, you're not allowed to bake it. That's the point. So it becomes that. So he says you don't have to worry about it. It's not yours.
Yeah. Okay. If you designate the challah.
Yes.
By definition, you make all Kanim Chayev Chametz, because any one of these Kanim will be the one.
Rashi had said, Dakati Le Motel Yad Koyin. This Chala has not reached any particular Koyin, so there's no particular Koyin that you could say is being over on Bayur Abay Motel. No, only if.
So basically, you're making it Hefker, you're saying.
I guess in a certain sense it's Hefker, but not real. It's not real Hefker, because it belongs to the Koyinim generically. It just doesn't belong to any specific Koyin.
So if it belongs to Kohanim generically, they're chayav then?
No. There's no such thing as being chayav generically. A person is chayav individually for their chametz, for bayirah, bayimatzah. A person is not chayav because there's chametz somewhere out there that belongs to his whole shevet. Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to have a general discussion about this matter of baking on Yom Tov and this matter of hoyel. So itma. The Kohanim could burn it, but not on Yom Tov. Oh, well, if you're talking about chametz on Pesach, no, they can't have anah from it, no. But they could burn it, motzei yom tov, but they can't have anah from that. We talked about that previously, yeah. No, it means that they have to burn it during Pesach. It means that once, according to Rabbi Yeshua, for example, where you're not baking it, you're leaving it as chametz, and if it becomes chametz, after yom tov, you're going to take it and burn it, because it's challah, and you have to burn it. But you can't have anah from it while you're burning it. So the Gemara says, Itma. Ha'ofer mi Yom Tov l'chol. If a person bakes on Yom Tov after he finished his meal, so he doesn't plan to eat anymore that day, and he bakes bread which is going to be eaten on weekdays. So, Rav Chista oma loike, Rabba oma eina loike. Rav Chista says he gets malchus for it because he's over on the issue of doing malacha on Yom Tov. Because if he was doing it to eat on Yom Tov, okay, malacha seichel nefesh, it's allowed on Yom Tov. But since he's baking now for after Yom Tov, because he already finished eating, then therefore Rav Chista says he's over and he gets malchus. One second, yes, we'll talk about. Rabba oma eina loike, Rabba says he doesn't get malchus. Rav Chista oma loike, because it's loyam rinin, hoyul mikle lele urchim chazile. We don't say another hoyle, that if guests were to show up, then it would be usable for them. We don't say that concept, says Rav Chista. Right now, there are no guests, therefore Malkus. In fact, the Meiri points out, you don't even call it Hasra Safik. You don't say, yeah, but if guests were to show up, then they would be able to eat it. As long as there are no guests around, then Rav Chista says it's a Hasra Svada. You were over, and he was over on the issue of Yom Tov, and therefore he gets Malkus. Rabba Omar Ene Loike, Rabba says he doesn't get Malkus. I'm reading Hoyle because we do say this kind of Hoyle. Actually, Tosfos points out, I mean, once you say Hoyle, so you could always say there's a Hoyle Shiesh by Sakona, and Tosfos says, come on, you don't count that. A Hoyle Shiesh by Sakona is uncommon enough that even Rabba is going to agree you don't say Hoyle for that. So, Omale Rabba Lerav Chista. So Rabba asked Rav Chista, Lidi Doch Da Amrit Loyam Rinan Hoyol, according to you that we don't say Hoyol, and therefore you're not allowed, and therefore Midar, in other words, the question basically is it Osir Daraisa to cook or to bake on Yom Tov L'Tzorech Hoyol? So Rabbah says to Rav Chisda, if you're saying that we don't say Hoyle, Heyach Oifen Mi Yom Tov L'Shabbos, then you have to ask, if Yom Tov comes out on Friday, how are you allowed to cook and bake on Yom Tov for Shabbos? Mela, if you say that you say Hoyle, then the idea is you're making it on Friday, which is Yom Tov, and we say Hoyle. Yes, you already finished your meal, but Orchim could still come, therefore you're allowed Midaraisa to bake and to bake and sin. So, okay, so then the Chachamim made a concept of Eid of Tavshilin in order to strengthen that idea. But if you say that you can't and that it's actually an Isser Daraisa, and you don't even say Hoyo, then on what grounds are you preparing for Shabbos? Amalei Mishum Eidu V'Tavshilin. So Rav Chisda says, okay, because you're making an Eidu V'Tavshilin. Rabbi says, what do you mean? Mishum Eidu V'Tavshilin shown in Isser Daraisa? What does that mean? An Eidu V'Tavshilin can't be matu an Isser Daraisa. Me that I say that we say Hoyle, then okay, the mechanism by which Eid of Tavshilin works is it's based on the mechanism of Hoyle. Since Hoyle, that if you had guests, then they would be able to eat it. So even though you know you don't have any guests coming, you're still allowed to on the grounds of Hoyle. It's only Drabbanan that you wouldn't be allowed to. And fine, the same Drabbanan who said that you shouldn't can say that you can make an Eid of Tavshilin and be allowed to. But if you say that Daraisa, you don't say Hoyo, and therefore the person is getting Malkus, so what mechanism does Eid of Chatzeres work on? Eid of Tavshilin, I mean, work on? Amalei, so sort of Chisda answers him because like this. You, up until now, we were talking about preparing on Yom Tov for a weekday. Now we're talking about Yom Tov preparing for Shabbos. Now Shabbos is not part of the Yom Tov anymore, but still. Midaraisa tzorche Shabbos nas in the Yom Tov. On a Daraisa level, you would be allowed to prepare on Yom Tov for Shabbos, even though Shabbos is not part of the Yom Tov anymore. Because, after all, Shabbos and Yom Tov are considered to that extent one Kedusha, because they're both called Shabbos. Shabbos, of course, Yom Tov we know is called Shabbos, like Mimachos or Shabbos. So therefore, Midaraisa, you would be allowed to prepare from one to the other. But Rabbanon who it's only the Chachamim who made the Gzeira that you can't do that. Shema Yomer Oifen Mi Yom Tov Aflachol, because if you're allowed to bake and cook on a Friday, which is on a Yom Tov, which is on Friday for Shabbos, you might come to bake and cook on Yom Tov, which is on a different day of the week, for a weekday. So that poet is only Drabbanan. The Kivin Das Ruchur Rabbanan Eved Tavshilin. Now that the Chachamim required him to make an Eved Tavshilin, Islay Hekera. So that makes a Heker that now he'll know he can't. Now he'll know he can't prepare on Yom Tov for a weekday. But yeah, that particular poet is only Drabbanan. But the poet about the Machloikus is, in other words, Rav Chisda is saying preparing on a Yom Tov for a weekday is an Isur Daraisa, and we don't say Hoyle, so he'd get Malkus. Rabbah would say that even preparing on Yom Tov for a weekday, we still could say Hoyle, and therefore he's not going to get Malkus because guests could always show up. Most of the Rishonim, by the way, Paskin like Rabbah, so therefore we would say Hoyle. Given that we have to be able to say Hoyle, then what it means is when it comes to cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos, when Yom Tov's on Friday and you make an Erev Tavshilin, it does have to be that you finish the cooking, or that the cooking is done, or at least which is Michael Bender or Soy or whatever, early enough that there would conceivably be time for somebody to eat some of the food before Shabbos. If you have 5 minutes before Shtir, you're first putting something up to cook, then that wouldn't work. Okay. The Gemara says Eisvi. So Rabbi says to Rav Chisda, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says, actually, the part of this is the Mishnah in Beitza, the rest of it is a Braisa. Behema hamasukenes, if you have an animal that is dangerously sick, so you want to, it's not trefa, but it's dangerously sick, and if you don't shecht it, it's going to die, and then you're just going to have an avela. So are you allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov? Lo yishchot, you're not allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov. Unless you're able to eat a kezayis of it roasted while it's still Yom Tov. In other words, there has to be at least enough time to be able to strip off the skin from at least part of the animal and take a kezayis of it and roast it, which is faster than kashering it, and eat it. So, and then it's mutu, even if you're not actually eating from it. Now, which means, so as long as you have enough time in the day. So yochol lechol. So the implication is, as long as you're able to eat a kezayis from it, afak abdoloy boi lemechol, even if you're not actually going to eat. So Rabbah says, according to me, that I say that we say hoyol, the amri hoyol. Okay, same thing. Hoyol ve'iboy lemechol. Since if he wanted to eat from this animal, matzi me'ochel, he would be able to eat. Meshum ha'ochi yishchet. That's reason enough to allow him to shech the animal. Elul didach. even though he's not actually eating from it, because of hoyo, because he could eat from it. There was enough time in the day that he could eat a kazayis from it if he wanted. But you are saying we don't say hoyol, amayish, right? So why are you allowed to shecht it at all? He should have to, if he's going to actually eat meat from it, then fine. But if he's not going to actually eat, and we're just saying there's enough time in the day for him to eat, what grounds is that to be allowing it, according to you? Amalei, so Rav Chista answers, mishum hesed mamoine. The reason why it's allowed is because otherwise he's going to be losing a lot of money. What do you mean? Mishum hesed mamoine, shirin, isur daraisa? What, we're being matur in isur daraisa because of money? Amalei, so Rav Chista says, what I mean is like this. Ain, mishum hesed mamoine. It's not that we're being matur in isur daraisa because of money. Mishum hesed mamoine, because he knows that if he doesn't do something, he's going to lose a lot of money. Gomer belibo lechol kazayis. Therefore, he mentally decides, you know what? Yes, I already ate my yom tov meal. Yes, I'm really full. I'm going to force myself to eat a kazayis of meat from this animal in order to make it allowed to shecht it. And since the yefshal kazayis possible or shechita, since you can't get a kazayis of meat without shechting, that allows us to shecht the entire animal for the sake of that one kazayis. But in other words, the point is, Rav Chista is saying, yes, he would actually have to physically force himself to eat that kazayis or find somebody else and have him eat the kazayis or whatever. But if not, then yes, it would be also to shecht it on Yom Tov. As opposed to a Quintadaba, you don't have all of that. A Quintadaba, he can take the Mishnah in the straightforward sense. As long as you have enough time to eat a kazayis, then Hoyo allows us to say that since you could have eaten the kazayis, then therefore it's allowed. So you're allowed to shecht the animal. Okay, and we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more challenges that Rabba tries on Rav Chista on his din that we don't say Hoyo. And then eventually we'll relate this whole point back to our Mishnah where we said again that we have the Machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, which we're saying is also on Hoyol, although a slightly different Hoyol. Again, it's the Hoyol of that he could be Matu Neder, or the Hoyol, according to Rashi's second explanation, that he could take a piece off of each one and use it as Chala. So yeah, so eventually we'll relate this whole thing back to that. You can't give it to the Kohen because you could give it to the Kohen. It's Tomei. The Kohen can't eat it. But, that's the point. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you bake it first, and that prevents it from becoming chametz. Now the only problem is it's Truma Tmeya, but Rabbi Eliezer, on the grounds of Hoyol, allowed you to bake it in the first place. Rabbi Yeshua, who doesn't hold of Hoyol, doesn't allow you to bake it in the first place. Therefore, the only thing you can do, according to him, is designate it while it's still dough and leave it and not worry about Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh.